By the time Kyle and Boomer made it back to the railroad station, they saw that a car had been attached to the little switch engine. The car was crammed full with rescuers in the event their worst fears were realized and there was an actual train wreck. For that reason, Kyle believed there were probably as many sightseers as there were actual rescue workers on the train.
Cooley, you need to add some more cars. At least three and maybe more.
But what for? Everybody that's going is already aboard.
What about the people we find at the train wreck? Don't you plan on bringing them back?
Oh, yes. Yes. Damn, I completely forgot that.
It took another 5 minutes for the engine to back up the switch track to find a couple more cars. Not until then was it ready to go. As Kyle and Boomer started aboard, Kyle walked up toward the engine.
Where are you going?
I'm gonna ride up here.
All right, I will too.
No, there won't be room for both of us. And I really think you should be back with the others to sort of keep them calm.
Yes, sir. I reckon you're right about that.
The fireman, seeing Kyle starting to climb up in the engine, reached down to give him a hand.
You ever been in the cab of an engine before?
No. Just tell me where the best place to stay out of your way, and I'll go there.
If you want to, look ahead. You can stand there on the left side of the cab. I'll be busy keeping the steam up, and the engineer looks out on the other side.
Taken in the engine cab, Kyle saw a bar running horizontally across the cab from the left to the right. Seeing him look at it, the engineer spoke up.
Maybe I'd better explain some of this to you. If you know what's what, it'll help you to stay out of the way.
Good idea.
The engineer pointed to the bar that had caught Kyle's immediate attention.
That's the throttle. You make it go by pulling it back. And this sturdy-looking ratcheted lever with a hand release? This vertical bar on the right is the Johnson bar. It controls which way the steam goes into the cylinders. Helps you decide whether you want to go frontwards or backwards. And right next to it here, this chunky-looking brass handle sticking out to the left, is the air brakes.
Well, thanks for the lesson. It will help me keep out of your way, I'm sure.
All right, boys. Here we go.
Looking ahead, Kyle saw the track unfold out of the black void, come into the light of the gas headlamp, then slip behind them as the train hurtled through the darkness.
How fast we going?
I'd say we're doing at least 40 miles an hour.
Don't you think we ought to slow down a little?
Why?
Well, if there's been a train wreck, we may not see it in time to stop.
Oh, damn, you're right!
The engineer eased off on the throttle. The train slowed gradually until they were doing no more than 15 miles per hour. Then, ahead in the darkness, Kyle saw the golden glow of several fires.
Right there ahead, the fires. You see them?
Yes, they were smart to light some fires.
I hope they are fires that were lit, not a burning train.
Back at the site of the train wreck, Matt worked with Dr. Presnell and others pulling out the injured, freeing the trapped, and removing the dead. He wanted, with everything that was in him, to run away now that he had the chance. But when the train caught on fire, he knew there was no way he could leave all the people who had been so badly injured trapped in the burning wreckage.
Listen! Do you hear that? That's a train! They are coming for us!
Slowly, the train screeched to a stop no more than a few feet from the compromised track.
God help us.
Look at this, Marshal.
Boomer and Kyle stepped down from the train even before it had come to a complete halt.
The last three cars of the train has burned completely to the ground. Only the coal tender, the express car, and baggage car ain't burned up. I wonder how many have been killed.
We'll figure that out later. For now, we need to get busy helping those who are still alive. I just hope...
Marshal, there's Doc Presnell.
Hello, Ben. Boomer.
Doc had a black eye and a cut on his face. Otherwise, he appeared to be all right, though there was blood on his hands and clothes. It didn't take but a moment to see that it wasn't Doc's blood. It was blood from the many injured passengers he'd been working with.
What happened, Doc?
I'll be damned if I know. One minute I was enjoying my dinner in the dining car. The next thing I know, we ran off the track. Since that time, it's been all chaos.
The prisoner.
What prisoner?
According to a telegram I received, this train was supposed to be carrying a prisoner. I better check on him.
Boomer, can you give me a hand here?
Sure, Doc. I'll do what I can.
Leaving Doc and Boomer, Kyle started looking through the gathering of shocked, frightened, and injured people. until he saw someone wearing the blue jacket and hat of a railroad conductor.
You're the conductor of this train.
Look, mister, I don't know any more about what caused this train wreck than you do.
No, it's not about the train wreck.
Then what is it about?
I understand you had a prisoner on this train. Someone who was being taken to Yuma Prison.
You're talking about the murderer we picked up in Purgatory?
That's right, where is he?
I don't know.
Have you seen him since the train wreck?
I didn't see him before the wreck.
You didn't see him when they put him on the train?
No. I was told he'd be in the express car, but I didn't see him put him on. As far as I know, Lon Kingsley is the only one who saw him.
Lon Kingsley?
The express man.
Can you point him out to me?
Well, I can point him out all right, but it won't do you any good to talk to him.
Why not?
Well, he's dead. Him and a deputy that was riding the car with him. We found them both dead in the express car.
What about the prisoner? Did you find him dead too?
No, only two people we pulled from the express car was Kingsley and a deputy. And they're both lying over there if you want to see them.
Like you said, they're both dead, so it won't do me any good to see them. But I am going to take another look inside the express car.
Walking back towards some of the railroad officials who'd arrived with the rescue train, Kyle borrowed a lantern, crawled upon the side of the express car that was facing up, then let himself down through the open door into the car. It had not burned, but it had turned over onto its side, so it was badly damaged. He moved around inside the car, having to be very careful to pick his way about, since what had been the left wall was now the floor.
Hello? Anyone in here?
Yes, I'm here.
The person who called started to climb down into the car.
No need to come in here. The car's empty.
Who are you?
I'm United States Marshal Ben Kyle, and you are?
I'm Hodge Deckard with United Bank Exchange. We are responsible for transferring large amounts of money between banks, and we had a shipment on this train. I've come to retrieve the money.
Good luck.
Good luck? What an odd thing to say.
Deckard started looking.
Oh, this isn't good.
What isn't good?
Here is the transfer document. This was in the bag with the money.
Maybe it just fell out in the wreck.
No, I don't see the bag. And if the transfer slip just fell out in the wreck, some of the money would be here as well. The money is gone.
How much money are we talking about?
$20,000.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, sir, it is. And it was on this train, which means one of these passengers had to have come in here and took it.
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe? Who else could have done it?
The train was also transporting a deputy and his prisoner. Both were riding in the express car. Right now, the prisoner seems to be missing.
A deputy and his prisoner were riding in the express car? There should be only one person in this car, and that would be Mr. Kingsley, the express agent.
Well, I guess the railroad made an exception in this case.
This is unconscionable. My company shall certainly send a strongly worded message to the railroad for this breach of security.
Finding no one in the car, Kyle decided to have a look at all the bodies to see if there might be one in chains. He had the conductor point out Kingsley and Hayes. That was when he saw the small bullet hole in Hayes' forehead.
I'll be damned.
What is it?
The deputy. He's been shot. I guess that solves the mystery as to who took the money.
The officials who were running the rescue operation broke the passengers down into three groups. Those who were not injured or were only slightly injured were allowed to board the train on their own. Those who were seriously injured were put into a car that was being converted into a hospital, while the last car was serving as a morgue on wheels. Matt walked with Louise Dobbs as she and her son Jerry went to board the first car. Then, one of the officials saw that the little girl Mrs. Dobbs was carrying was dead. He reached for her.
I'll take care of her for you, ma'am.
Louise jerked the little girl back and glared angrily at the railroad official.
No. She stays with me.
She can't stay with you, madam.
But she must. Susie would be terrified if she is separated from me.
Madam, your little girl is dead. It will not matter to her whether she's with you or not.
It matters to the lady. Let the girl stay with her. It can't hurt anything.
Who are you?
It doesn't matter who I am. I'm someone who knows right from wrong. Let the girl stay with her mother.
This is not railroad policy.
How about train wrecks? Are train wrecks railroad policy?
No, of course not.
Maybe not, but you had one, didn't you?
Sir, I fail to see how that's relevant.
Here's what's relevant. The mother wants to keep her little girl with her.
Now, what's going on here?
Then seeing the woman holding the little girl, Kyle took off his hat. He knew the woman, knew that she and her husband lived on a small ranch just outside Sentinel.
Why, Mrs. Dobbs, I didn't know you were on...
It was not until that moment that he saw the little girl was dead.
Oh, no. Not your little girl. Mrs. Dobbs, I'm so sorry.
I want to keep her with me, but he says that I can't.
As I tried to explain to the lady, we have a car reserved for the deceased. The little girl must go in there.
No!
I think you can make an exception in this case.
You may be a United States Marshal, but I am an agent for the Southern Pacific Railroad. And I will inform you, Marshal, that in terms of railroad policy, I am the one who makes the decisions.
Really?
Yes, really.
You are under arrest.
What? Under arrest for what?
For manslaughter. By maintaining an unsafe railroad, you caused the death of this little girl.
Are you insane? I had nothing to do with that.
You said you represent the railroad, didn't you?
Yes, I do.
I hold the railroad responsible for the death of this little girl, as well as the deaths of the others who were killed. And as you are a representative of the railroad, I'm putting you under arrest. Boomer, put cuffs on him.
Wait a minute! Isn't there some way we can work this out?
Well, there may be. Do you have any suggestions?
Suppose I let the little girl stay with her mother.
Then I suppose we could work something out so that you wouldn't be under arrest.
That's not right, Marshal. That is pure coercion.
Oh, really? I don't look at it that way. I look at it as common sense.
Very well. The woman can keep the girl.
Noticing that several of the other passengers had gathered around, Kyle took the opportunity to address them.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention for a moment? I would like to ask for your assistance. I am United States Marshal Ben Kyle. We had word that this train was transporting a prisoner, a convicted murderer, to Yuma Territorial Prison for hanging. He was riding in the express car.
Matt glanced at the passengers. Of those who had boarded at Purgatory, only Jerry and his mother had survived. That meant they were the only ones who could identify him. He saw Jerry staring back at him.
Marshal?
Yes, son, what is it?
Jerry looked up at his mother and she shook her head no. It was then obvious to Matt that she was not going to give him away.
I didn't see anything like that.
What about the rest of you? You telling me that none of you saw a prisoner being put on board when the train was in Purgatory?
The uninjured passengers looked at each other and shrugged, but no one spoke up.
All right, folks, let's get on the train now. We have to get out of here so we can bring up the wrecker engine to start cleaning this mess up and getting the track open again.
Young man.
Matt looked around and saw that he had been addressed by the doctor.
I noticed you while we were rounding up all the injured. You seemed to know what you were doing. I wonder if you would ride in the car of the injured with me.
At first, Matt was going to refuse, but then he decided that riding in the car with the severely injured might actually be the best thing for him. The marshal would, no doubt, be questioning everyone in the other cars.
Yes, of course. I'd be glad to.
By the time the train reached Sentinel, three more of the injured had died, including the first man Matt had pulled from the wreckage. The three deaths weren't due to inadequate care, but happened because the victims had been so severely injured that even had they been in a hospital with the best of treatment, they would not have survived. Matt found himself in a somewhat unique position now. Although he had a rather substantial bank account in Colorado, there was absolutely no way he could access it from here. To do so would require him to write a draft. And while an exchange of telegrams between the banks could validate the check, it would also expose him as Matt Jensen, a wanted man. Once he stepped down from the train in Sentinel, though, he saw what might be a partial solution to his problem. Some officials of the railroad had set up a table inside the depot building, and there they were given $20 to each of the passengers, explaining that it was a compensation for what they had been through. Every cent Matt had been taken from him when he was arrested back in Purgatory. For him, the $20 seemed like a godsend. But when he stepped up to the table, he was told that he would have to show his ticket to collect the money. Matt made a show of patting himself down.
I must have lost the ticket back at the site of the train wreck.
I'm sorry, sir, but without the ticket, we have no way of knowing you were really there. I hope you understand. If we didn't do that, then just anyone could come in here and claim they were on the train.
This man was on the train, and I will vouch for him. Without him, I fear many more would have died than did.
The railroad official ran his hand through his hair.
All right, Doc, if you say he was on the train, I'll take your word for it.
The man gave Matt the $20 bill.
On behalf of the railroad, I wish to extend my apologies for the ordeal.
Thanks.
Matt turned to the doctor.
And thank you.
No, young man. On behalf of the passengers, I thank you. You know, I never got your name. I'm Dr. Presnell.
The name is Cavanaugh. Martin Cavanaugh.
It's good to meet you, Mr. Cavanaugh. If you are ever in this part of the country again, please look me up. I would love to buy you dinner sometime.
Thank you.
Leaving the depot, Matt started up the street toward the saloon. In a small town like Sentinel, the saloon would not only offer Matt the opportunity for a cool beer, he had worked up quite a thirst today. He might also get a line on the people who had caused the train wreck in the first place. It was not that he expected anyone here to have any additional information on the train wreck, but someone might have heard of a man named Odom. And though Matt wasn't a lawman, he had made himself a vow while holding the little girl's body in his arms. That vow was that he would go after Odom and the others who had caused this. The Oxbow Saloon was filled with patrons when Matt stepped inside. Nearly all were talking about the train wreck, and not only about the train wreck, but also about Matt. The general consensus, from what Matt could overhear, was the people believed it had been the prisoner Matt Jensen that had taken the money and executed the deputy.
Hey, you, mister. You was on the train, wasn't you?
Was this someone who had seen him being put on the train in chains? Someone who could recognize him?
Yes, you was on the train. I recognize you.
Matt braced himself for a confrontation.
You pulled how many out of that burning train? 10? 15? Mister, as far as I'm concerned, you're a genuine hero.
Matt relaxed.
Folks, while most of us was wandering around with our thumb up our ass wondering what to do, why this here fella was doing. Fred, whatever this fella's drinking, I'm buying.
Thank you. I thought I'd just have maybe one beer, then get something to eat.
If you don't mind biscuits, bacon, gravy, and fried potatoes, you can eat here. On me.
On you?
I'm Sally Fontaine. I own this place.
Well, I thank you, ma'am, but it's not necessary for you to buy me supper. I can pay for it.
I know it isn't necessary, but from what I've heard about you, it would be my privilege to buy you supper.
Thank you.
What's your name, mister?
Cavanaugh. Martin Cavanaugh.
Here's to Martin Cavanaugh!
Here you go, sir.
Sally brought Matt's supper to his table.
Thanks.
Digging into the meal, Matt realized this was the first time he had eaten all day. His plans to have a late breakfast in Purgatory this morning had been thwarted by a gunfight, a mockery of a trial, and then a train wreck. He ate his meal with much enthusiasm. After his supper, Matt got into a card game. Playing very conservatively and raising a calling only on sure hands, he doubled his money. Leaving the saloon, he walked through the dark to the Homestead Hotel, only to learn that, due to the train wreck, there were no rooms available.
Is there any place else in town that rents rooms?
There's Ma Baker's boarding house. It's all full up as well.
I see.
Mister, was you on the train that had the wreck?
Yes, I was.
I'll tell you what. Hotel don't rent out stalls in the stable for sleeping, but I'm not supposed to do this, but if you want, you could bed down in the stable out back. You ought to be able to find enough clean straw to accommodate you.
Thanks. I reckon I'll just take you up on that.
It'll cost you a quarter.
I thought the hotel didn't rent out the stalls for sleeping.
They don't.
Then what's a quarter for?
Quarter is for me being willing to take the risk. I could get fired if my boss found out.
Matt reached down into his pocket and pulled out a quarter.
Sounds reasonable enough to me.
That night, lying in one of the stalls and looking through an open window of the stable at the moon and stars that were shining so brightly above, Matt thought about this day. He had rarely had a day so filled with events. He'd spent the previous night out on the desert, riding into town for breakfast. Killed a man who was bent on killing him, stood trial, been found guilty and sentenced to hang, been put in chains and placed on a train bound for Yuma prison, then lived through a wreck of that same train. And to make matters worse, that wreck had been purposely caused by men named Odom, Bates, Paco, and Schuler. Matt had run across Odom before, but he had never heard of any of the other three men. He knew their names only because he had heard them call each other by name. He had also gotten a very good look at all of them. And while he had vowed to find them to avenge the death of the little girl he had pulled from the wreckage, he now had a new and even more important reason for finding them. If he could bring them justice, it would clear him of the murder of the deputy and the theft of the money the train was transporting. That would still leave him wanted for the killing back in Purgatory, but he believed that a legitimate trial would settle that issue for him. Matt contemplated the path he had just laid out. It would be difficult at best, but for a man without money and without a horse, it would be almost impossible. His first order of business would have to be to get his horse and saddle back. He had money hidden in the saddle, and it was hidden so well that he would bet that if he could recover the saddle, the money would still be there. Joe Claiby worked as a hostler for the Maricopa Coach Line, but he also dealt in horses, sometimes buying horses from the stage line and reselling them. He was an honest man in his dealings, marking them up only enough to make a decent profit. But like many who worked with horses, there was always that dream that someday he might find a really great horse at a bargain price. Although it didn't seem likely that he would find such a horse at a marshal's auction, he kept his eye on the horses that Marshal Cummins had confiscated from his prisoners. By law, Cummins was required to hold an auction, selling off each confiscated horse to the highest bidder. The money would then go into the Purgatory City coffers. At first glance, it might seem unusual to realize that most of the auction property was bought by the marshal himself. But then, when one realized that the marshal had a habit of setting the marshal's auction sales at odd times and in odd locations, it was easy to understand how that might happen. The marshal had recently confiscated a particularly good-looking sorrel from the man who killed Deputy Gillis and would be holding an auction soon. Claiby intended to take a look at the horse, and if it looked good to him, he would make it a point to find out when and where the auction was to be held.
I heard that the marshal confiscated the horse from the fellow that shot Gillis.
It's Deputy Gillis. And he wasn't just shot, he was murdered in cold blood.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying otherwise. I'm just asking about the horse. Is it true that the marshal confiscated the man's horse and is going to hold an auction?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know when the auction will be. It'll be announced in the paper, same as it always is.
Well, where's the horse now?
Where the marshal keeps all his horses, down to the city corral.
I think I'll walk down there and take a look at him.
Claiby was approaching the corral and looking toward the commotion. He saw Kenny Watson, the young stable hand who worked for the city corral, on the ground. Without a second thought, Claiby grabbed a saddle blanket from the top rail of the fence, then vaulted over and hurried toward the horse.
Hey, horse! Horse! Hey! Here!
Seeing Claiby in the flapping blanket, the horse stopped his attack against Kenny and came toward this new irritant.
Hey, Kenny, get out of here while I keep him busy!
Kenny crawled and scrambled toward the fence, where he was helped up and over by eager hands. Using the blanket as a bullfighter would a cape, Claiby managed to entice the horse into one errant pass. The horse corrected himself and reared again, this time coming right at Claiby. At the last minute, Claiby jumped to one side, tossing the blanket at the horse as he did so. The blanket landed on the horse's head, temporarily blinding him. Claiby managed to make it back to the fence. The same hands who had helped Kenny out of the corral now reached down to pull Claiby up and over the fence.
Thanks, Claiby.
Boy, what the hell did you do to get that horse so mad at you?
I didn't do nothing except try to ride him. I don't know what got into that crazy horse.
He's high-spirited, all right. Is this the horse Marshal Cummins is going to put up for sale for auction?
Yeah, though why anyone would want to ride that horse is beyond me.
Claiby looked at the sorrel, which was now prancing around the corral, lifting its legs high in an excess of energy and tossing its head.
I'll say this for him. He's a good-looking horse.
Being a pretty horse ain't good enough if he tries to take your head off every time you try to ride him.
You got a point there.
I don't understand the problem, though. The man that shot Deputy Gillis must have been riding him. Or else, how would the marshal have got a hold of him?
Well, could be this is a one-man horse.
A one-man horse?
Yeah, there are such horses. Horses that are trained so that only one person can ride them.
That don't make no sense to me. No, sir, that don't make no sense at all. Why would anyone want to train a horse that way? You make him a one-man horse, that means you can never sell him.
It also means nobody can steal him. And when someone gets a horse like this one, well, I reckon the natural tendency is to want to hold on to him. And you can do that by training him so that only yous can ride him.
You've worked with horses all your life, Claiby. You ever seen any other horses like this? I mean, trained so that only one person could ride them?
Oh, yes, I've seen them.
Well, can that ever change? I mean, you take this horse. You think this horse can ever be rode?
Claiborne looked at the horse. The sorrel was now standing on the opposite side of the corral, looking back toward Claiborne and Kenny.
Yeah, I think it could be rode. By the right person, anyway.
What's so funny?
The marshal isn't the right person.
Think he'll be able to sell him?
Well, not at the auction. Since if it goes true to form, he'll have the auction in the middle of the night when no one's there to bid against him. What happens afterward is anybody's guess. Kenny, do me a favor.
What's that?
Don't tell the marshal that this is a one-man horse.
All right. I won't say a word, but I sure plan to sneak me a peek first time Marshal Cummins tries to mount this critter. Yes, sir, that's going to be a sight to see.
The reaction of any ordinary man who had, by circumstances, escaped the sentence of death by hanging would be not to return to the town that had handed down his sentence. But Matt Jensen was no ordinary man. Matt Jensen was a man with a mission. He planned to clear his name and avenge the killing of an innocent little girl, not necessarily in that order. To do this, Matt needed a horse, and the horse he wanted was Spirit. But Spirit was back in Purgatory.
I can sell you a ticket to Purgatory if you don't mind riding up in the seat with the driver.
Matt spoke with the ticket agent the next morning when he went to the stage depot to inquire about passage to Purgatory.
The thing is, you see, with the railroad between here and Purgatory still out, why, we're running twice as many trips as normal, and every one of them is full.
I don't mind riding with the driver.
Well, truth to tell, Mr. Cavanaugh, the ride up there is better anyhow.
Yes, I've ridden there before.
Matt walked outside to get a breath of fresh air. Outside, he saw a young man nailing a poster onto the wall of the stagecoach depot.
Wanted, Matt Jensen for murder and train robbery. $5,000 reward, dead or alive. Contact U.S. Marshal Ben Kyle, Yuma, Arizona, 77. Well, that's just great.
A few minutes later, a stagecoach drew up in front of the depot. The coach was weather-worn, and the name on the door, Maricopa Coach Company, was so dim that it could scarcely be read. The luggage was brought out onto the porch, then loaded into the boot, though there was so much that several pieces had to be put on the roof. The driver, a man named Gabby, spent about 5 minutes loading and securing the luggage. Then Gabby climbed up into the driver's seat.
Come on up, sonny. Soon as the others get loaded, we'll get underway.
The road ran parallel with the Southern Pacific Railroad tracks, and about 2 hours after they left Sentinel, they passed the burnt-out, smashed, and strewn cars from the wreck. A huge rail-mounted lifting crane was on the scene as a railroad work crew went about the business of repairing the railroad and cleaning up the mess.
That must have been some wreck.
It was.
Was you in it?
Yes.
Well, I'll be... All this time we've been talking and you ain't said nothing about being in the wreck.
Gabby, if you'll excuse me for saying so, all this time you've been talking.
Well, I guess you got me on that one, sonny. It worked for nothing that I come by this moniker, Gabby. So, you was in that train wreck, was you?
Yes.
I figured it was pretty bad, what with all the bodies and the injured that was brought into town and all. I guess I just didn't have me any idea what it actually looked like.
Maybe seeing the train wreck, the complainers down inside will understand why they are being inconvenienced.
Don't count on it. Folks like that would complain if you hung them with a new rope.
Gabby, have you ever heard of an outlaw named Cletus Odom?
I hope to smile I've heard of him. Why are you asking about him? Don't tell me you're a bounty hunter looking to claim the reward on him.
No, I just heard the name and I was wondering about him, that's all. Why? Is there a reward on him?
Oh, yeah. There's a reward on him, all right. $5,000 it is. Same as what's on this Jensen fella. But whoever goes after it will have to earn it. Because I tell you this about him. He may be just about the meanest son of a bitch that ever drawed a breath. He robbed a coach once, then shot every man, woman, and child so's nobody could identify him. Only one of the women lived long enough to tell the law who did it, which is how come we know who it was.
That was a brave woman.
Yeah, sure she was that.
This man, Cletus Odom, would he be the kind of man that would wreck a train just to rob it?
Hell yeah! He'd do that in a heartbeat. And to tell you the truth, if we didn't know for sure that this here Matt Jensen fella wrecked the train, I would have bet a dollar to a donut that Odom did it.
Well, how do we know that Matt Jensen did it?
How do we know? Because Marshal Kyle said he done it.
And you believe everything Kyle says?
Well, Ben Kyle is a good man. He ain't given much to lies and such. So if he said Jensen done it, then I reckon I have to go along with that.
How do you think he did it?
Oh, there's probably lots of ways he could have done it. He could have shot the engineer and fireman so there was nobody to run the train. And if it was going too fast around the curve, well, you could see what would happen.
But why would he have done such a thing?
Well, if he stole the money, then he'd probably wrecked the train just to cause a lot of confusion so he could get away.
You seem to have it all worked out.
Yes, sir. Well, truth to tell, though, I ain't never done nothing like that. From time to time, I like to plan things out. Sort of a hobby, you might say.
I see.
But now, don't go get me wrong. There ain't no way on God's green earth I'd ever actually do something like that.
Getting back to Cletus Odom, do you know much about him?
You sure are asking a lot of questions.
Well, I tell you, Gabby, you like to talk, so I figured I'd just see to it that you talk about something I'm interested in.
You got me there, sonny. You sure you really did. Well, let's see. What do I know about Cletus Odom? Cletus Odom. All right, sonny. You just sit there and listen, and I'll tell you about Cletus Odom. At one time, Cletus Odom was on the right side of the law. Well, leastwise he could say that. He was a bounty hunter, you see. But he was the kind who would rather bring in a dead quarry than live prisoners. He always made the claim that he didn't have no choice, that he was only defending himself. Well, even then, there was folks that didn't like him. But then he done something that put him on the wrong side of the law for good. Seems there was a couple of cowboys named Evans and McCoy. They rode for the Rockin' J. That's a spread about 10 miles south of Sentinel. I knowed them both. They was good old boys. A little rambunctious at times, if you know what I mean, but all in all, they was good boys. Well, sir, after a drive one day, wasn't much of a drive. All they done was just bring some cows into town from the ranch in order to ship them on out on the railroad. Then, after they got the cows loaded and drawed their pay, they went into the Oxbow and started drinking. Turns out that Odom was in the saloon, too. And he was causing trouble for this little old gal at Evans' life. I mean, she was a whore, there was no getting around that, but Evans was sweet on her. Anyhow, when he seen Odom slap her, he walked over and knocked Odom down. Well, sir, Odom, he didn't like that much. No, sir, he didn't like that none at all. So he got to egging Evans and McCoy on calling them cowards and other things that no man could take and still call himself a man. And Evans and McCoy pulled iron again, Odom. And that was their mistake.
He killed them?
He killed them, both of them. Dead on the doornail. There was an inquest, but it was ruled self-defense, being as a lot of people seen that Evans and McCoy drawed first. Of course, nobody felt good about it. What with Odom egging them on like he'd done. So whatever support Odom might have had for bringing in outlaws was, well, it sort of dried up that day.
If he was found not guilty, why is there a reward out for him?
Well, sir, like I said, Odom didn't have many friends left after he killed them two cowboys. Then, not long after that, he killed the man and brung him in for the reward. Only thing is, they'd already pulled the paper on the feller he had brought in when they found out that he wasn't guilty. Besides which, the reward didn't say nothing about dead or alive in the first place. They tried Odom again, and this time they found him guilty of murder. But he escaped and went on the outlaw trail.
What about the man who ride with him? A Mexican named Paco, a big man named Bates, and someone named Schuler?
They're all riding with Odom?
So I've heard.
I'll be damned. I didn't know that. Well, I can tell you about two of them fellas. Bates, the big feller, is a mean son of a bitch, all right. Word is he once beat a miner to death with his bare hands. The Mexican, I don't know nothing about. I ain't never heard of him. But the other fella would be Moses Shuler. Me and Moses Shuler was friends once. He didn't start out to be an outlaw. But I don't doubt that he's rid down that trail by now.
What sent him that way?
Whiskey, I reckon. Once whiskey gets a hold of a man, he don't let him go.
Say the two of you were friends?
Yes, sir. Moses was a powder monkey with the Cross Point mine. He was a good one, too. Why, he could shave off shale as easy as cutting butter. But that's a dangerous job, and Shuler started drinking a bit. Just to settle his nerves, you understand? Only he drank too much once, and he double-loaded his chute. Instead of carving off a little bit of shale, it caused a mine cave-in. There was 9 men killed in that cave-in. Moses was never the same after that. He started drinking more and working less until he was fired. I heard tell that he blew a safe during a bank robbery down in Tucson, but don't nobody know that for sure. You say he's working with Odom now?
Yes, or so I've heard.
Oh, that's too bad. Moses may not be dependable, and maybe he's even stole a few things, but I don't think he would ever kill anyone. Not with how he was so upset over the accident in the mine.
How long since you've seen him?
How long? Oh, Lord of mercy, I'm not sure how long it's been. I'd make it, 3 years or more.
So he could be riding with Cletus Odom now, and you'd never know it.
Yeah, you got me there, sonny. Yeah, sure, you got me right there.
Sorry I was the one who had to tell you about your friend.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I reckon I would have found out soon enough anyway. Well, there's the relay station just ahead. We'll grab a bite to eat here, change teams, and be on our way. Oh, and while I'm looking after the teams, would you mind giving this to Rittenhouse over there? The marshal wants these posted everywhere.
Gabby gave Matt one of the wanted posters he had seen tacked up earlier.
Sure, I'd be glad to.
As the coach rolled into the station, Gabby hauled back on the reins and set the brake.
Whoa, now.
With the stage at a standstill, the little cloud of dust that had been following them now rolled by them. Gabby climbed down.
Folks, we'll be here for half an hour. Stretch your legs, take care of your needs, maybe grab some lunch. Ms. Rittenhouse runs the kitchen here, and she makes some mighty fine chicken and dumplings.
Matt climbed down as well. While the others went inside, Matt walked over to a couple of men who were standing near the corral.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Are you Rittenhouse? Gabby asked me to give this to you.
Oh, $5,000. That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
Damn. No picture, no description. How's anyone supposed to find this feller?
Got me.
Rittenhouse turned to the young man to continue the conversation they were having when Matt had walked up.
So you're telling me that you're not going to take that string of horses for me?
I can't, Mr. Rittenhouse. Ma says Cindy's going to have a baby just any time now, and I wouldn't want it to come while I was pushing horses.
Damn it, Jimmy, I've got to get that string to Purgatory. Now suppose you just tell me how the hell I'm going to do that.
I'll take them for you.
Beg your pardon?
You have a string of horses you want to take to Purgatory. I'm going to Purgatory. I'll take them for you. But you'll have to loan me a horse and saddle. I got here on the stage.
Mister, I don't know anything about you. How do you expect me to trust you with a string of horses?
I guess you'll just have to trust your instinct.
What's your name?
Cavanaugh. Martin Cavanaugh.
Cavanaugh. Martin Cavanaugh? I knowed me a Martin Cavanaugh once. He was a good man, too. A hell of a good man. Captain Martin Cavanaugh t'was. I served with him during the war.
My pa was a captain in the army during the war.
Your pa, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't reckon there's much a chance it'd be the same man or nothing like that. But just because I'm curious, what outfit was your pa in?
Pa started with the 1st Regiment of the Kansas Militia, but he was wounded, and after that he became an adjunct to General Cox of the 23rd Army of Ohio.
I'll be damned. Yes, sir, that's him. That's the same Captain Cavanaugh I was talking about.
Rittenhouse stuck his hand out.
Any son of Captain Cavanaugh is all right in my book. Are you sure you'd like to take that string on into Purgatory?
I'd be glad to.
All I can pay is $10.
$10 will be fine. Like I said, I'm going there anyway.
Jimmy?
Yes, sir, Mr. Rittenhouse.
Captain Cavanaugh was one of the finest officers I ever run across. And his son just saved your job by agreeing to take the horses. You owe him a word of thanks.
Yes, sir, I do. Thank you, Mr. Cavanaugh. I hope you understand. If it weren't for Cindy about the whelp, I'd been glad to go.
I understand. You give your wife my best.
Oh, yes, sir, I will.
You owe him a bit more than thanks. Saddle up a rota for him and get them horses on the line. But before you do all that, get this posted.
Rittenhouse handed Jimmy the Dodger on Matt.
Yes, sir.
You can come on in and have some lunch while Jimmy's getting everything ready for you.
Thanks, but if it's all the same to you, I'd just as soon get started right away.
I understand. All right, I'll just go in and get your money.
I appreciate that.
As Rittenhouse walked toward the relay station, Matt watched Jimmy tack up the poster on the wall of the barn. There were several other posters there as well, so Matt walked over to have a look at them as Jimmy got the horses ready. It didn't take him long to find the one he was looking for.
Wanted, dead or alive, for murder and robbery, Cletus Odom, reward of $1,500.
Unlike the wanted poster for Matt Jensen, this reward poster did have a picture of Odom. It was a woodcut, but evidently taken from an actual photograph because Matt saw a striking resemblance between the picture and the man he had seen robbing the train. Looking around to make certain he wasn't being observed, Matt tore the Dodger down from the gray, weathered plank siding the barn and stuck it in his pocket. He was standing at the fence with his arms folded on the top rail when Rittenhouse came back. He handed Matt a $10 bill in a brown paper bag.
I know you said you didn't plan to eat, but there's some fresh baked bread and ham in the sack. I thought you could gnaw on it a bit while you're on the trail.
Thanks, Mr. Rittenhouse. I appreciate that.
No problem. Say, whatever happened to your paw anyway? I never heard from him again after we was all mustered out. Of course, him being an officer and me just a private, I didn't expect to. But I have wondered about him from time to time.
My father died some years ago.
Oh, that's too bad.
It was a long time ago.
Yes, and as they say, time heals all wounds.
At that moment, Jimmy came out riding a saddled horse while holding on to a line which six other horses were attached to. He swung down from the horse, then handed the reins to Matt.
I'll hold the string until you're good mounted.
Thanks.
Matt hopped up into the saddle and reached down for the string. Jimmy handed it up to him.
Don't run them too hard, because maybe they'll have to take out a coach first thing in the morning.
I'll take care of them.
You should arrive just before dark. Go right to the relay station. They'll be looking for them, and they'll no doubt meet you when you get there.
Matt nodded, then reached down into the sack to pull out a sandwich. He took a bite, waved at Rittenhouse and Jimmy, then, slapping his legs against the side of his mouth, rode out of the station. When Odom, Paco, Bates, and Shuler reached the little town of Quigatoa, they stopped in front of the saloon.
I'm going to get me a whole bottle of whiskey and a woman. No, two women. I ain't never in my life been able to do nothing like that before.
You ain't gonna do it now, neither.
What do you mean I ain't? I got my share of the money coming to me, don't I?
Yeah, and we'll make the split here. But then we are going to go on our separate ways before we start spending any of it. We won't be spending any of it here in this town.
That don't make sense. Why not spend money here? It's our money now, ain't it? So what's the problem?
Think about it, Bates. If the four of us come into a little place like this and suddenly start spending money like it was water, don't you think some people might get a little suspicious?
Hell, I don't care whether they get suspicious or not. What difference does it make?
Makes a difference to me. Like I say, we spent the money here, but you ain't gonna start spending it till we go our separate ways. Once we do that, you're on your own. You can do anything you want.
Si, senor. I believe that is a smart thing to do.
Si, Paco agrees with me.
Paco's a damn Mexican. The hell do I care what a damn Mexican has to say about anything? What about you, Shuler?
I need a drink.
Ha! I ain't never seen you when you didn't need a drink.
The four men stepped into the saloon and looked around. It was nearly empty.
What the hell? Is this here saloon open?
Si, we are open.
How come there ain't hardly nobody here?
It's 9 o'clock in the morning, senor. We don't get busy until afternoon.
Whiskey.
We have tequila and beer.
Tequila.
And breakfast. You serve breakfast in here?
Well, si, senor. Bacon, eggs, beans, tortillas.
Yeah, that'll do. We'll be there in the back.
Odom pointed to the table that was the most distant from the bar. When the four men took their seat at the back of the room, Odom put the canvas bag on the table.
All right. If this bag has $20,000, that's $8,000 for me and $4,000 for each of you.
Senor, how is it that you get twice as much as we get?
Because I'm twice as smart. You should be glad I agreed to let you come in with us in the first place.
Paco, we agreed going into this that Odom would get the most money.
I did not agree.
And I agreed for you.
Paco glared at Bates for a moment, then looked over at Schuler.
How much money is he getting?
He's getting $4,000, same as the rest of us.
Why should he get as much money as we're getting? He did nothing. Este baboracho, todo el tiempo.
What did you say?
I said he was drunk the whole time. We did not need him to plant explosives on the safe. He did not earn his way.
He gets his cut.
Odom counted out the money. $8,000 for himself, then $4,000 each for Bates, Paco, and Schuler.
Here you go, boys. Don't spend it all in the same place.
The stagecoach depot and corral of horses were on the west end of Purgatory. That was good for Matt because it meant he could deliver the string of horses without having to ride all the way into town and take a chance on being recognized. However, being seen in town wasn't as risky as it might appear to be because his trial had been held within an hour of the shooting. The trial had not taken place in a courthouse nor even a city building. Instead, the trial was held in a saloon, the Paradise Saloon. And the jury was made up entirely of saloon patrons, most of whom were drunk. That meant that there were very few of the town's citizens who had actually had the opportunity to see him. He could probably walk the streets without fear of being recognized. The depot was small and unpainted, except for a sign that read Maricopa Coach Company. At the side of the building was a fenced-in corral, and at the rear of the corral, a large barn that was badly in need of painting. Matt pulled his horse to a halt. Matt tied his mount off before he started tending to the string of 8 horses he had brought with him. A man about Matt's age came out of the barn and started walking across the corral, picking his way carefully between deposits of horse apples. He had on an apron and was using it to wipe his hands as he came up to the fence.
My name's Joe Claiby, and you might be...
Kavanaugh, Martin Kavanaugh.
Yeah, what can I do for you, Mr. Kavanaugh?
Actually, I suppose it's what I can do for you. I brought you this string of replacement horses for the stage line.
Yeah, I thought that might be it. Are you working for Rittenhouse now, are you?
Temporarily.
Temporarily? And what do you mean temporarily?
I mean, I'm not working for Mr. Rittenhouse full time. He just hired me to deliver this string for him.
Well, you must have done a pretty good job at it. I see you got them all here in one piece. You've already been paid, right? I mean, we don't owe you anything.
Not a thing.
Good, good. You're a good man, Mr. Kavanaugh. You'd be surprised at the number of people who would try and get paid twice.
I imagine there are a few like that. This horse belongs to you as well.
It does?
Yes, Mr. Rittenhouse loaned it to me so I could bring over the string.
Oh, just a minute. Let me get a closer look.
The man made a thorough examination of the horse, then smiled.
I'll be damned. You say Rittenhouse loaned you this horse himself?
Yes. Why, is there something wrong?
No, nothing wrong. I tell you, Mr. Kavanaugh, you must have done something to impress him because this is Blue. And old man Rittenhouse don't let just anybody ride him.
Blue is a good horse.
You're needing a horse, are you?
Yes. You have one for sale?
Not exactly. I thought I was going to get one. I showed up at the marshal's auction last night, but the marshal outbid me.
Marshal's auction?
Yeah. You see, by law, whenever the city marshal confiscates a horse, like, say, from the outlaw that's going to prison, he's required to hold an auction to sell it off. But lots of times he'll keep news of the auction so quiet that nobody shows up. Then the marshal can buy him real cheap.
Is that a fact?
Yep. The marshal's damn smart, he is. He has pretty nigh become rich by buying horses for $1, then selling them for $75 to $100. He's got one for sale now, a fine sorrel with a bright reddish-brown coat. That's the horse I was bidding on, but like I say, the marshal outbid me. Truth to tell, with this marshal, I don't know if he actually paid the money he bid anyway. There's no way of checking since he was buying the horse from his own self, so to speak. Yeah, he may have stepped in it, though.
What do you mean?
Oh, hell, Mr. Cavanaugh, there can't nobody ride this horse except Matt Jensen. That's the fella that owned it, and he ain't likely to ever ride again, seeing as how he come into town, killed Deputy Gillis, was tried, then took to Yuma to be hung, all in the same day.
Maybe the fact that nobody can ride him will make the marshal sell the horse cheap.
Well, maybe, but what good would it do you if you did get the horse? Like I said, there can't nobody ride him.
Well, I'm pretty good with horses. I've broken a few in my day. I'd like to give it a try. What about the saddle? Did the marshal confiscate the saddle as well?
I'm sure he did. Lots of times he sells the saddle with the horse. Wait a minute. Let me step into my office here. Would you like to see the paper the marshal put out?
Yes, if you don't mind.
All right. You wait here. I'll go get it. But if you buy it, tell him Joe Claiborne sent you. He might give me a little something for suggesting it to you.
Matt waited while Claiborne stepped into the office. A moment later, he came back outside with a piece of paper and showed it to Matt.
For sale. Sorrel with red coat and white face. Fine saddle. $150. See City Marshal Andrew Cummins.
Matt handed the paper back to Claiborne.
Thanks for showing this to me, but I'm afraid $150 is a little too expensive for my blood.
Yeah, well, that is a little steep. Especially for a horse you'd have to break in order to even ride him. Listen, are you be staying around town long? Then the reason I ask is, if you're looking for a job, I could maybe put you on. You know, business is real brisk since the railroad got cut.
That can't last much longer, though. I came by the wreck today. They're working really hard and will probably have it cleaned up within a few days. And I don't think you would want to be taking on extra help now, only to have a cutback when your business slows again.
Man, come to think of it, I guess you got a point there. Well, I better see to the horses. Thanks again.
Oh, wait.
Yes, sir?
Let's say I wanted to have a look at this horse. Where could I see it?
Well, when I seen it, it was down at the city corral. But now that belongs to Marshal Cummins, I reckon you'd probably find it in the Marshal stable.
The Marshal stable?
Yeah, it's just behind his office. Ask one of the deputies. They'll take you back and let you see him.
Thanks.
Matt walked on down toward the town, oblivious of the red and gold sunset behind him. He stayed on the boardwalk, keeping close to the building so as not to stand out in plain sight for anyone who might have been in the saloon at the time of his trial. About half a block before he reached the marshal's office, he ducked in between a bootmaker's shop and a meat market, then moved back to the alley. The smell of blood and freshly butchered meat was overpowering. He saw the marshal's stable about 50 yards up the alley and, glancing around to make certain he wasn't seen, moved quickly to it. The top half of the door was open to allow some cooling air for the horses. Matt stepped up to the half-open door and looked into the shadowed interior. At first, he didn't see Spirit.
Spirit! Spirit, you in here, boy?
Good boy. Just be patient for a little while. Once it gets dark, I'll come get you.
Matt went out behind the alley, which was actually behind the town, and finding a dry arroyo that ran parallel with the alley, he slipped down into it to wait for darkness. About 1 hour after full darkness, Matt climbed out of the arroyo and walked quietly, cautiously, up to the marshal's stable. Opening the bottom half of the door, he moved into the stable, which was partially lit by a silver bar of moonlight that splashed in through the door.
Spirit?
Matt reached the stall where Spirit was being kept. Stepping inside, he reached out to pat Spirit on the neck. Spirit lowered his head and nuzzled him.
Did you think I'd abandoned you, boy? I need to find the saddle.
A little bubble of golden light from a match illuminated the stall sufficiently well for him to see the saddle, which was draped across a sawhorse in the back of the same stall that housed Spirit. Extinguishing the match, Matt got the saddle and then put it on Spirit. Once Spirit was saddled, Matt led him out of the stable back across the arroyo. Not until he was on the other side of the arroyo did he climb into the saddle. He rode out into the desert country just to the north of the town of Purgatory. Once again, he was well mounted and free. It was a good feeling, and he knew that the only thing he had to do to put all this behind him was ride back to Colorado. The instinct to return to Colorado was strong, but he couldn't get the scene of the little girl impaled by the bloody stake from the smashed railroad car
out of his mind. As he had passed her broken body to her mother, he had made the decision to go after the man who had caused the wreck. And he wasn't going to go back on that decision now. He would take care of that first. Then, he planned to come back to Purgatory and clear his name. He wasn't sure how he would be able to do that, but he did not plan on spending the rest of his life with wanted posters dogging him everywhere he went. Matt reached down and patted Spirit on the neck.
It's good to have you back, boy. I was getting lonely without my old friend to talk to. Yes, I know. You've heard all my stories. You're just going to have to hear them again.
It was mid-morning of the next day when Matt happened onto a remote building. At first, he thought it might be a line shack for some ranch. No more substantial did it appear. But as he came closer, he saw that it was a combination store, saloon, and hotel. The sign out front read,
Lonesome Charlie's Food, Beer, Beds.
The inside of the building was lit by washed-out sunlight that stabbed in through windows that were so covered with dirt that they were nearly opaque. In addition, bars of sunlight stabbed through the wide cracks between the boards, illuminating thousands of glowing dust motes. The inside of the building smelled of bacon, flour, and various spices. An old woman was sitting on a chair, smoking a pipe and reading a newspaper. Matt could see the headline on one of the stories. Train wreck on Southern Pacific, many dead, many injured. The white-haired man, wearing an apron, came in through the back door. He was still poking his shirt tail down into his pants.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I'll take some jerky and coffee.
Yes, sir. We got some fine jerky. What about bacon? Freshly smoked, it's mighty tasty with biscuits and a little red-eyed gravy.
I'm sure it is, but jerky and coffee is all I need right now.
Yes, sir, I'll get it together for you. We just got the paper in today. We've been reading all about the big train wreck on the Southern Pacific. Have you heard anything about it?
Not too much.
They're saying a fella by the name of Matt Jensen caused the wreck. Got away with $100,000, too.
George wrapped Matt's purchase up in a piece of oilcloth and slid it across the counter to him.
That'll be $5.
$5?
The purchase should have been little more than 50 cents.
It's pretty high, isn't it?
You don't have to buy here.
Matt shook his head. He gave George a $5 bill.
You know what? You are what they call a sharp businessman.
Well, I appreciate the compliment.